This week on Making Contact.
In North Korean prison camp, and some of them came at early age, they have no knowledge or connection with outside world.
North Korea often appears in the headlines for its militarism and current push to become a global nuclear power. Yet the legacy of routine human rights abuses connected to the government of Kim Jong-il rarely makes news. North Koreans live in one of the most politically oppressive and economically depressed society on the globe, according to international human rights groups. And not surprisingly, many of its citizens seek asylum in foreign nations. It said, some are captured and entered into a torturous repatriation process, some are believed executed, and some, putting their lives on the line, enter the U.S. illegally, seeking refuge and a new life. On this edition, we hear the stories of two North Koreans who crossed border after border, eventually making their way into the U.S. I'm Tina Rubio, your host on Making Contact, a program connecting people, battle ideas, and important information. Marches, rallies, protests. This spring, hundreds of thousands took to the streets in cities across the U.S., many waving Mexican flags, to stand in solidarity with the millions of undocumented workers in this country. The debate focused mainly on Spanish-speaking populations, driven by desperation, often using precarious means to get into the U.S. to find what they hope is a better future. But there are others, often not represented in those marches, who cross U.S. borders every year, seeking refuge and asylum granted to them by international law, but just recently recognized. Making Contact's Alina Potts shares the long and difficult journey of two North Koreans who risked everything for their freedom.
거기 관리소에서도 그 다르곤 할 수 있어요.
In North Korean prison camp, and some of them came at early age. They have grown up in prison camp. They have no knowledge or connection with outside world. So therefore, they work like cows and horses all their life.
That's Kim Yong, a 55-year-old refugee who escaped from North Korea in 1998. He's describing what life was like in the Kwanli-so, or forced labor prison camp. There, he spent years working in coal mines and eating little more than corn and salt. Both Kim Yong's father and older brother were accused of spying for the U.S. and were executed by the North Korean regime under a practice called collective guilt. That's when three generations of family members are punished when one family member commits a political crime, such as reading a foreign newspaper or coming into contact with South Koreans.
North Korean prison camp is something like, once you're in for good, and dead body, it cannot be recovered. That's the status of North Korean prison camp.
Knowing Kim Yong was in danger, his mother put him into an orphanage when he was 7, under an assumed name. He attended revolutionary school. At age 19, he joined the National Security Agency as a lieutenant colonel. While there, he set up a trading company, exporting fish to Japan to generate income for the North Korean regime. For years, life was good. But in May of 1993, while he was being evaluated for a promotion to full colonel, his true identity was discovered. That was when his relatively comfortable life came to an abrupt end.
He didn't know anything about it, but it was known to him that his father had a connection with American CIA, and he was executed in 1957 in Kaesong. He didn't know anything about it, but the record was there.
Kim Yong says he was arrested and brutally interrogated for months at a detention facility run by the Gukga Boibu, or National Security Agency. bypassing any judicial process, he was forced to serve a life sentence of hard labor at Kwanliso No. 14. In 1996, he was transferred to another Kwanliso, No. 18. There, Kim Yong unexpectedly became reunited with his mother, who was also imprisoned. One day, she stayed out too long gathering edible weeds to eat and was crippled by the guards. She urged Kim Yong to escape, and he did. In September 1998, Kim Yong hid in a coal train and made his way into China.
When he came to China, he had only willpower to survive. That's the only thing he had. When he came to China, he has no relations there. He was desperate. Since he was in no position to pay for anything, he had to eat the scrap of restaurant garbage. He was happy even though he had the scrap from the garbage can. He enjoyed the freedom of not being in the prison camp of North Korea.
According to Anti-Slavery International, at least 50,000 North Koreans are estimated to be living in China. Yet the Chinese government considers them illegal migrant workers, not refugees. Kim Yong knew he had to hide from the Chinese authorities. If he was discovered, he'd be sent back to North Korea. There, he'd again face harsh punishment at the hands of the government, or he could face death.
그럼요. 그는 저는 이전 잡히면 죽는다.
He was in fear of getting caught, and he got razor blade chopped up, put it into a little ball. So when he get caught, he will swallow that, so he can kill himself. What of being repatriated to North Korea? He was desperate.
Kim Yong took shelter in the boiler room of what turned out to be a church. There, he was discovered by a group of interested strangers who would change his life.
When he went there, he found a missionary church-going people's house, stay at the boiler room for 2 nights. The wife of missionary guide, with the help of guide, helped him to go to Mongolia.
제가 몽골리아 룸부사에 갈 수 있도록 도와줬습니다.
How did he get into Mongolia without the Chinese catching him?
그 중국 조선족을
the missionary paid the guide from China to lead them to Mongolia.
Yeah. Do they have to disguise themselves in any way?
Everything is done at night. They don't go out during the day. And taxi was a method of transportation.
This guide was part of an underground railroad of activists. Their mission? To help North Koreans escape China and make it to relative safety in South Korea. So once again, in order to save his life, Kim Yong had to risk it. But he never made it out of China.
He was caught by Chinese authority, and after 14 days stay in Chinese prison camp, they had little window, and then he just went through that window and then escaped to Mongolia. When he got to Mongolia, they were almost half dead.
But even after a successful escape from that Chinese prison, Kim Yong would be captured again, this time by Mongolian soldiers.
그 몽골리아 군인들한테 잡혔잖아요.
When he were caught by Mongolian soldiers, he told them he was from South Korea rather than North Korea, because if they find out he was from North Korea, they will repatriate him to North Korea. Then he will be in grave danger. The Korean embassy in Mongolia helped him to get to South Korea. It was the generosity of South Korean embassy to help him to go to South Korea.
In South Korea, Kim Yong met with South Koreans from the U.S. His desire to share his story led to an invitation to come to the U.S. by national human rights groups. In 2003, he spoke at events across the country, even participating in a congressional hearing in Washington, D.C. At the time, organizations in the U.S. were trying to garner support for the North Korea Freedom Act of 2004, which guaranteed refugee status for North Koreans who escaped the regime.
He thought it was his duty to expose the terrible regime of North Korea. He decided to form an organization called North Korean Refugee Association to spread the word about terrible state of North Korea and how they treat the people.
Kim Yong met senators and activists and stayed in the U.S. to form his own organization. The North Korea Refugee Association, based in Los Angeles, brings attention to the plight of North Koreans in this country. Through the association, he met 48-year-old Park Kum-yo, a restaurant worker who also lives in L.A.'s Koreatown.
I was born in
1958. I'm from Pyongyang back to in North Korea. I'm currently working as a restaurant worker.
Park says she escaped from North Korea because she was starving. It's been widely reported that famine, caused by a combination of bad weather and horribly misguided policies, has devastated the country. According to the U.S. Congress, as many as 2.4 million North Koreans died between 1995 and 1998, due to food shortages.
When I stayed in China, there were so many refugees who were caught. The country was packed with North Korean escapees, refugees. And so everywhere I went, there was more than enough North Korean refugees.
Park was also caught and sent back to North Korea in 2002. But she managed to escape again in 2003. She paid a broker to take her through China to Mongolia and finally to South Korea. But the danger wasn't over yet.
I was threatened by the South Korean CIA and told that I needed to cooperate with them to catch a broker that guided me to China and Mongolia. And if I didn't do it, then my relatives in South Korea would be in danger.
To escape these threats, Park fled once more. She flew to Canada on a tourist visa. There, she hired another broker to help her cross the border into the U.S.
So the broker put me into the car. When we arrived at the border, I ran to the fence, and on the other side, there were people waiting for me to take care of me. They gave me a ride all the way from the Canadian border to Los Angeles.
We'll have more in a few moments. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information, or for CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. You can also download programs or get our podcast at radioproject.org. Kim Bong-kyon, a 78-year-old ex-military officer, is seated with Kim Yong and Park Kum-yo. We are at a Korean restaurant in LA's Koreatown. Colonel Kim, a youthful septuagenarian, is sharing with us his secrets to longevity.
Talking about how to stay healthy. Not to eat wheat product, no white rice, drink a lot of water, sunshine, a lot of exercise.
Well, you look very healthy, so I'm going to listen to what you say.
상당히 건강해 보이시네.
Colonel Kim is originally from a town in North Korea. At age 19, he moved to the South due to discrimination he faced as the son of a landowner. There, he joined the Korean Army and fought during the Korean War. He later taught at a military college before going into construction. He came to the U.S. to be near his four children.
I have two sons and two daughters who study in the U.S. They obtained PhDs. Since I'm getting older, I wanted to join my sons and daughters here and try to do everything possible to democratize South Korea. South Korea is being pulled by North Korea, leaning more towards pro-North Korea.
Most of Colonel Kim's family made it to South Korea after the war, but one sister remains in North Korea. He knows he is unlikely to see her again.
As long as Kim Jong-il is alive, there's no chance of us being reunified.
To this end, Colonel Kim works toward the reunification of the two Koreas and their people. He is president of the Coalition of Korean-American Patriotic Organizations in the U.S. The group works to educate Americans about events in South and North Korea. They also assist North Korean refugees and asylum seekers who have made their way to the U.S.
There are about 77 organizations that are involved with our organization. We work to protect people like Mr. Kim and Mrs. Parks. They live in substandard situations here in the U.S. We wanted to do everything possible. Because of their status, they don't get all the wages that is owed to them. They get substandard wages for their work. They have to constantly hide themselves. They can't expose themselves to the outside world. The mission of the organization is to help those kinds of people.
Like others who enter the country illegally, North Koreans in the U.S. often live on meager wages and with constant fear. Yet, like many others, they feel that this life is their best chance at survival. Yong-suk Cho, who has been translating for Kim Yong, agrees.
My name is Yong-suk Cho. I'm 70 years old. And I came here in 64. I used to work for United Nations Commission for Reunification and Rehabilitation of Korea, called UNCOC. It was a commission initiated by UN General Assembly. We were to observe Korean elections. I was interpreter to Korean Military Advisory Group when I was honorably discharged from the Army, and I joined the United Nations. And I stayed there for, I worked there as a political and economic researcher. And I need a little more education, so I came here.
Mr. Cho says that many North Koreans who make it to South Korea still don't feel safe there. This is due, he says, to South Korea's policy of appeasement with the North.
South Korean regime is too soft on North Korea, and they're too lenient. Therefore, they don't want to hurt Kim Jong-il's feeling. So since they are favorable to North Korean regime, they don't want to say anything that will make uncomfortable to Kim Jong-il. That's why people like myself and Colonel Kim and Mr. Kim up against South Korean regime. They're being too soft. So as you heard from them, they don't take care of Korean refugees in South Korea. Therefore, they have to go elsewhere. So the choice becomes come to the United States.
Like others, he believes that the refugee issue will not be solved until the larger reunification issue is addressed. So for now, North Korean refugees in South Korea still live in fear. Like Ms. Park, they may face threats or even death. When asked if he wants to return to South Korea, this is how Kim Yong feels.
저는 한국에 가기는 좀 곤란합니다. 왜냐하면
He doesn't want to go back to South Korea because when he was in Korea, he was threatened that he was exposing North Korean regime. South Korea became a sort of pro-North Korea because it's complicated political ideology between North Korea and South Korea because of unification problems. He really doesn't want to go back to South Korea.
Others feel the same. Kim Yong estimates that about 100 North Koreans have made it to the U.S.
Yeah, 우리 그 탈북자들이라고 하게
되면 There's some in Washington, D.C., Virginia, and here. They went to Canada and Mexico. They have no legal way to get into the United States.
Kim Yong has many pictures from his trip to Washington, D.C.
I see. Mm. So Good. North Korean Human Rights Day.
Okay.
Mm. September 13, 2004.
Mm.
Oh, okay, cool.
영국 BBC 편집국장.
BBC editor-in-chief in England.
And it looks like you're standing in front of the pictures of the North Korean prison camp.
Yeah. The ones that you saw. This she is Susan Schulte.
Mm-hmm, okay.
He poses with Susan Schulte, president of Defense Forum Foundation. They are in front of satellite photos of North Korean prison camps, which he helped the U.S. government to identify.
This is Senator Sam Brownback.
Okay.
He shares another picture of him shaking hands with Republican Senator Sam Brownback of Kansas. He says these Americans have been instrumental in the passage of the North Korea Human Rights Act.
저는 그 그렇게 생각합니다. 여기는 말하자면 이민국이라 해서 오랜 역사의
He thanked there should be more lenient treatment for North Korean refugees. There are other people who crossing the border, but North Korean refugees is different from them. They came here because they want to testify to the world that North Korean regime is not desirable regime to be existed. So therefore, North Korean refugees should have a different set of standard to stay in the United States.
Since passage of the Act in 2004, nothing much had happened. Critics accused the U.S. of sacrificing its stated humanitarian goals for political and diplomatic appeasement of a dangerous North Korea, bent on obtaining nuclear power. But, perhaps in response to the stalling of nuclear talks, the U.S. admitted 6 North Koreans as refugees this May. These are the first defectors to enter as such since the end of the Korean War, half a century ago. Kim Yong is hopeful that this is the beginning of a larger change.
The U.S. government permit North Korean refugees to stay in the United States. It will help to democratize North Korea. They will probably do whatever they can to expose North Korea in any way they can. So U.S. government should have different set of standards for North Korean refugees.
At this point, no one knows how many more North Koreans will enter the U.S. as refugees, or how many other countries will join the U.S. in welcoming those who have escaped persecution. But for those who had to cross border after border illegally just to survive, the opening of a legal route to safety in the U.S. would most certainly be good news. For now, those who have made it here are sharing their stories, and they hope that the U.S. and the world will listen. For Making Contact, I'm Alina Potts.
That's it for this edition of Making Contact. Special thanks to Dan Turner, Ronald Rucker, Yasuyo Nagata, and Heidi Record. This program was produced as part of the National Radio Project's internship program. For a CD copy of program number 2906, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736 or go to radioproject.org. Lisa Rudman is our executive director, Dorian Taylor, communications manager, and Stefana Petrova and Alina Potts, production interns. And I'm your host and senior producer, Tina Rubio. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.